Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, it doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome to Top 5, a show where we want to believe. We ask you to dive into some books of some kind, and there's a small group of us that want to be a bigger group of us.
Yeah, we pick it up after it's already out on video. It's Top 5!
This is Top 5. This week, Top 5 Cult Things. Top 5 Cult Things. This is a listener suggestion, and believe me, listeners, I love when you guys send in top five suggestions because it makes it so easy for us to produce the show because it's just like, oh, here's a great topic. But let me tell you this. Here's what I will suggest. When you write in, and the same thing goes true if you ever send in a Major Spoilers Poll of the Week suggestion. Mm-hmm. Poll of the Week suggestion has to be like six words or less, right?
Right.
Who will win in a fight, Thor or Superman? What's better, Coke or Pepsi?
Right.
But you can't say, which James Bond music video was the best music video of 1987? Because it gets a little bit too long and drawn out.
Also, there's only one option.
And there's only one option, right?
And there's got to be 20 entries worth.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And that's like, the other thing is, what's your favorite James Bond film? Holy crap, there's 40 of them.
Yeah.
Right? Same way with the top five suggestions. If you want to suggest a top five, first of all, double check and make sure we haven't done it before. And I like those of you who recently have been sending stuff are like, yep, I checked. You guys haven't done it. So yeah, that's good.
Good for you.
The next thing is make it something that's not too specific.
Yeah.
Like, what are your top five Sherlock Holmes? Or maybe even better would be like somebody said, what are your top five James Bond songs?
Yeah.
Right. Well, between four people,
we're going to
cover
all of the
songs.
That is all of them.
Yeah. So
if we all did a discrete one.
It needs to be something broad enough to where we can all put our heads together and think about it. You know, when we did the top five podcasts a while ago, even though it was just Zach and I mean, we just scratched the top of our list. Mm-hmm. And the great thing is so many of you then wrote in and said, oh, you guys should check out this or this. Here are my top five. And that's really great, too. So if you have some top five suggestions, don't make it too restricting. Do send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com and we'll see where we go. And maybe it'll end up being the top five cult things that we end up with here. My number five, Blue Oyster Cult. Is that, is that how we're supposed to do that?
I mean,
top five cult things.
You control the
Fire
ship.
Of unknown
I've got,
origins.
I've got Cult of Personality on here. Mm-hmm. No.
Kool-Aid.
Different kind of cults there, Zach. I put Blue Oyster Cult down here for a couple of things, because a lot of times, even though they're super popular, I find out that they must have a cult like status because, or at least they're far enough, maybe at this point, they're far enough outside the range of mainstream to where if I bring it up to people, they're like, I'm not sure I know what you're talking about.
For me, the way that I went through this is, to me, like cult stuff is stuff that got popular or more popular after it was supposed to.
Mm-hmm. And I definitely think Blue Oyster Cult did that.
Blue Oyster Cult got super popular because of that Will Ferrell skit on Saturday Night Live, right?
Yeah.
So Don't Fear the Reaper suddenly was playing everywhere.
Right. So that's why I think that they didn't have much success in their initial incarnation. But
they did okay, didn't they?
I mean, definitely they became
more popular after Don't Fear
the
Reaper.
It's like things that bomb at the box office, but then later,
I've got some good ones on my list. Football, for example,
okay,
good cult thing.
Yes.
We put the Decemberists under favorite country songs. I think we have a little bit of elasticity.
Get away with this. Zach, what do you have for your number five?
This is one of those top fives that I'm leery about because to me, the way I've been introduced to these things, literally, if I look at my list, my top three are all things that have been introduced through you guys.
Like bad company.
So it's almost like, are they cult? Because people are like, you should totally, like, you should totally check this out. So I feel like I'm young enough that everything that's really cult has been in, like, the social conscious, like, my entire life almost. Uh-huh. At least since I've been, like, a teenager. It's like, well, is it a cult thing? So then I just pretty much, like, go on the internet, like, top cult movies. Like, let me check to see if it's a cult movie. Uh-huh. And then
you should have looked at, instead of cult movies, because several of those will appear on my list, but you should have gone in with, like, popular cult movies of modern times. Right, because that would be something a little bit more relevant. Like,
I mean, technically,
for example, Starship,
including modern times.
Yeah. No, I'm saying because, like, well, I don't want to ruin something that's on my list, but there's one that, as you said, Zach, for you, you would say, well, is this a cult movie? Yeah, because it became a cult movie when you were four, right?
Yeah.
But if you're looking at stuff like Cabin in the Woods, for example, that would consider it a modern cult movie.
I can see that. Yeah.
So, what do you have for your
number
five?
My number five is a movie that I believe is the first time I watched it was the first time I ever cried. I was laughing so hard watching a movie, and we watched it late over at my friend's house one night. And I told my dad I was watching it, and he's like, "Well, be careful watching this because there's themes stuff." And I was like, okay, Dad, I'm going to go watch this movie.
Your father is Torque?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Have you ever seen my dad? He's actually...
My
dad is actually 6'7", and he weighs about 280. So nice. He's kind of there. My number five is Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
Which I've been told is a cult movie by the internet.
Absolutely.
Legit.
It is one of the funniest things. Oh, one of the only Monty Python things I've actually seen, which I think is a disservice to my life in general, because I know my father-in-law will just, like, pull up random skits that are hilarious, so I know I need to watch more. And I think the Holy Grail is, I mean, the first time I saw the Black Knight part of that movie, yeah. I couldn't control myself. I was just laughing.
It's mainly a flesh wound.
So freaking hard. That movie got quoted a lot when we were in high school.
Oh,
it's just so
endlessly
funny.
In college, Stonebreaker, Dave Stonebreaker and I, and probably a couple other people, maybe Matthew, you were involved too.
His real name, Stonebreaker?
Stoney. That's awesome. We call him Stoney. And we would just go on this endless, just nonstop 5-minute throwing out every single Monty Python reference we could.
You must cut down the largest tree in the forest with a herring.
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny. So that's my number five.
We demand a shrubbery. Rodrigo, what do you have for your number five?
Let's see. For my number five, I have a web series, and actually a pretty early web series.
Yeah.
Which is really, really excellent, other than some, like, mild unfortunate, this was made in the, like, late 90s, early 2000s, homophobia.
Mm-hmm.
Which is it's a martial arts epic featuring an amazing 70s looking martial artist and a half robot man protecting a space sock from evil aliens. And that is Sock Baby. Sock Baby is a magnificent piece of martial arts nonsense on par with your Kung Fu Hustles.
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever you're into. I'm a big fan of it. It is done by Doug Tenapple.
Yeah.
You know, the Earthworm Jim guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, super excellent. Not a lot of people know about it, but if you are familiar with me, then you've probably had some sort of time in which I told you to go watch
I think I remember that.
When I... Like, Sock Baby is one of those things that has actually literally influenced my aesthetic. There are aspects of Critical Hit that are based on Sock Baby.
Cool. Matthew, what do you have for your number five?
My number five. This week I chose to go in order of cultiness. So my number five is the least culty of the cult films on my list. But it's important to think, and I actually didn't realize this until I was looking at my number five. The main characters of my number five are two actors that people consider to be almost inseparable. When you say one, you generally say the other. But they only actually did three movies together. Your Aykroyd and Belushi team only did 1941, Neighbors in 1981, which is a terrible movie. Don't ever go watch Neighbors. The only good thing about it is Tim Kazurinsky. And my number five, The Blues Brothers from 1980. And this is a movie that almost doesn't count as a cult film to me in a lot of ways, but then in other ways, it's like the perfect example.
Yeah, I think it absolutely does.
Yeah, it made some money. It was relatively successful. It wasn't as successful as they wanted it to be, but it's endlessly quotable. And it's a movie that when we were in college, Stephen, Tom Boaz and I used to quote and incessantly.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know.
All the time. Yep. Just quote the hell out of that movie. And the best part about it is the interaction between John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd as Jake and Elwood, the Blues Brothers. It's a tale of redemption. And it's this almost this universal journey where it's like the Iliad or the Odyssey in a way. They have a goal. They have to get through the goal, and they do it through the use of kind of cunning and smarts and charisma and a car that is literally powered by God, apparently, because at the end, you know, the joke is that the car falls apart. They're on a mission from God. Got everybody in it. A really, really good watch. Even if you sit down and you catch like the tail end, you get to the point where like Charles Napier is driving and he's glued his foot down to the floorboards and the good old boys are about to drown. Just sit down and watch the rest of that movie because the property damage alone makes it worth the price of admission.
Crazy over the top. One of those. Yeah, I forget. I was listening to doing an interview and they were talking about the blue. Maybe I was listening to Howard Stern talk with the Dan Aykroyd about how they spun that off from Saturday Night Live and how it was so much fun making it. And even though it had a lot of quote unquote success, it wasn't as successful as they thought it would be compared to some of the other Saturday Night Live movies.
The wonderful thing about it is if you know anything about the blues musicians of the 70s.
Oh, yeah, they're all in there.
All the guys in the band are legitimately people.
They're big.
Yeah.
They're big.
Yeah. All of these guys are like the big deal. And if you look at like Mr. Fabulous or Triple Scale Tom Scott, these are names that you hear
when they talk about realistic
stuff. But and of course, it has Cab Calloway and Princess Leia with a machine gun. You got to love that.
Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
Which, and that was the most interesting part about that Dan Aykroyd interview, what he was like. They really, really, really had to convince Aretha Franklin to dress up as a waitress because she's the queen of soul, and she wasn't going to have any of that in that movie. And so they finally had to convince her to do it. And it's a great scene.
It makes the best, one of the best scenes.
Yeah. It really is a great scene. Yeah, Blues Brothers is a great movie. My number four is Call of Cthulhu. When it was originally published and all of the Lovecraftian horror stuff, when it was originally published, people just didn't really get it. It was in sci-fi horror magazines of the time, which sold okay, but they weren't great. And of course, Lovecraft essentially died penniless. But it wasn't until years after where he had given some writers permission to just do whatever they wanted with the Lovecraftian mythos. And it wasn't until years later where other people started to develop this. And when the publishing company started doing the reprints in book form that Lovecraft, as we know him today, which is, I would say, very, very popular, people started to latch onto it. And I want to say it was probably like the late 50s, early 60s, I think, when the first volume was collected. I have to go back and look. But it was a good 40 years after Lovecraft was gone, or 30 years after he was gone, before people really recognized what he was doing in creating this big horror, and the fact that he made it, you know, open source essentially and let people do with it what they will is really, really awesome. Unfortunately, it also let people know that Lovecraft was a horrible, horrible racist, but
there are plenty of successful racists.
Yes, exactly.
You get that.
Yep. So my number four is Call of Cthulhu / Lovecraftian mythos as one of the top five cult things.
My number four thing is, in my mind, probably the I guess there's a couple of things that I'm like, this is certainly a cult thing that I shouldn't even check on the internet. Back in 2008 and 2009, my junior and senior year of what is referred to as high school.
Is that what they refer to it as?
Yes.
Okay.
There was this web series that started that followed the life of college students on not UCLA's campus in a series called Dorm Life. And it ran for two seasons. It has like 40 episodes. I can't remember how long they are. Maybe like 12 to 15 minutes, somewhere around that time. And this came about at the time when like Parks and Rec was starting right now. The Office was like in its third or fourth season. So they had this mockumentary kind of style going to it. And each of the people on their dorm hall, which was Five South, had to talk into a webcam to like chronicle their freshman year in college. So there's just a lot of crazy things that happened. And it worked really well. It was the first thing I can remember on the internet making sure that we were refreshing their page the day we knew they would post it, just to see when it was finally posted so we could watch it. If you want to see what I'm talking about, it's all up on Hulu now. You can watch it there for free. It was the first time we ever had to try to figure out how you downloaded like videos from like YouTube or something, because there was this part where the Five South was playing their rival dorm in flag football, and the character's RA was just going nuts, and he was doing this pep talk, and at the end of the pep talk, he goes, "Blood makes the grass grow, kill, kill, kill," and we just absolutely lost it. And so we finally figured out how to try to download that thing, and I might still have my computer. My old laptop, because we would just play that. We'd send it to each other once in a while because we just would lose our crap when we listened to it. So that's Dorm Life, a web series back in the early kind of days of web series. I guess it's probably not true. The internet had been around a long time before that. From my memory, the first thing I can remember as a web series, really enjoyed it. We were all very sad when it ended. I'm pretty sure it ended because they were all actually in college. And they were like, "We gotta, you know, like get out of here and go do other things. There isn't this weird web series." But it was a lot of fun. I was just on the Wikipedia page for it, and it was developed by some like social media company in LA back in 2008, and they're not even doing anything.
Attention span
like,
media.
Yeah, attention span media. They're not even doing anything like that anymore. So it's like they probably like. Well, and the thing is, it like got some awards from like the Webbies and stuff, or at least it was nominated. So it did okay, but it was just really, really funny. I haven't watched it recently because I'm kind of, when I started thinking back on it, I was like, I wonder if it's still funny or if we were just at that right age where it was just this really funny thing.
There's a lot of stuff on the internet like that.
Yeah, so I'm kind of leery of going back and watching it, especially because it was such a, like a thing, like, because you know that talk to the camera style comedy, sure, which is coming, kind of going out, but now that the Muppets are doing it with their thing, they're mocking it, yeah, so that's nice.
That's the stage that it's in, right?
Yeah, that it's now parody. Got to that point, yeah, it's parodied, but this was certainly right in that time where it was big, so I wonder how it holds up. I might need to check out a few episodes, but that's Dorm Life, my number four.
All right, my number four is something that I think people are starting to learn about. Right now, it's in its period where it came out. People weren't necessarily all that into it, but I think people are starting to catch on. And that is Trolley brand strawberry puffs.
Oh, I know Trolley.
That's
right. I don't know what you're talking about.
They're the gummy worm people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But did you know that they also make strawberry puffs?
No.
Which are... presumably strawberry flavored. It's very difficult to tell.
I know what they are. I've had these before. I know what they are. But you type into Google Trolley space S and strawberry puffs is like the very first thing that
autofills.
That's
right. People are starting to pay attention.
I've had these before.
But it's like, that's the thing. It's like people have had it before and they're pretty good, but you haven't thought about it. Strawberry puffs are half gummy, half marshmallow.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They are strawberry flavored? Because you know, it's a gummy. It's like, red. Is it really flavored?
It's red and it's pink, and they tell you it's strawberry. That's so your right. brain's That's like, exactly oh, right. strawberry.
So they just have a very satisfying consistency if you're into gummies. It's like, if you like gummies,
they have those peach rings and those other things.
Yeah, actually, it's that same thing. Trolley mm-hmm. does that kind of half marshmallow, half gummy thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they've applied that peach ring technology yeah. to this like strawberry populated style confection.
Breaking news, ladies and gentlemen. We have applied our peach ring trolley gummy yep. into strawberry puffy form.
That would be right. a great press release to send out.
That would be fantastic.
I have become death, destroyer of strawberry.
And here's the thing. Trolley does a lot of good stuff. I've had Trolley products that are abhorrent.
Yeah.
They do like, they have this candy called like gummy rocks or something like that. It is the worst thing
that
I've
ever had. That sounds awful.
It is the worst thing I've ever had. Like, and that includes me like, finding this thing in my mom's cupboard and thinking that it was like jelly beans, but it was actually just regular beans that hadn't been cooked. Gummy rocks are actually worse than that. but strawberry puffs are excellent. And you now, hipsters, are able to get in on the ground floor of this because it's not popular yet. It's still a cult thing. And you too can have some gummy strawberry puffs. This section of Top 5, not sponsored by Trolley.
But sponsored by Crest, makers of fine toothpaste.
Yep.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, also not true. That's my number 4.
All right. Matthew, what do you have for your number 4?
I don't believe in cult candy because I don't actually pay attention. Hey, look, candy.
Yeah.
But
here,
my number
this
four.
Kool-Aid.
Sick. My number 4 dates back to my youth, as so many things do, because I am old. The 70s were a very tumultuous decade. They were a difficult decade. And a lot of the things that came up in the 70s kind of reflected that aesthetic in that everybody was kind of a little bit desperate and maybe a little bit mired in what Carter called a great ennui. But in 1978, I started watching a television show that I found out later was an extremely realistic look at life behind the scenes in the radio business in a small market radio station. WKRP in Cincinnati aired on CBS for 4 seasons in about 37 time slots. Never 2 in a row, I believe, is what it was. And it just sort of bounced around. But I believe that this is a cult show for 2 reasons. One, when it comes to syndicated programming, your magic number is 100 episodes. A lot of shows, they'll be like, well, we did 100 and we're done because now we can go into syndication with our 100 episodes. WKRP never did 100 episodes. They never made that quote unquote magic number to where you can go 30 weeks and then circle back around. But they still made it into syndication and were one of the cornerstones of syndication for a long, long time. Basically behind the scenes at a weird small market radio station, the guy running the place was kind of a loon, and the salespeople were awful, and the newsman was off his gourd. And I've worked at stations very much like this.
Oh, and yeah, every, man. One of our GMs was like a heavy into coke.
Every single person on this show is someone very similar, if not archetypically identical to people that I worked with. At one point, I was working in a television station where the engineer would just sort of slide through at 3 in the morning and come back through. And Bruce and I used to joke that we wanted to do WKRP in a small market TV station where every single episode, the joke was, has anybody seen the engineer? And the last scene of the very last episode is going to be the engineer coming in like Vera in that last episode of Cheers and going, hey, did somebody page me? So you do 100 episodes, and then that's your final joke. But WKRP is relatively realistic, aside from, you know, some of the more over-the-top lunacy. The throwing the turkeys out of the helicopter moment is beautiful. And while that never happened, things of equal stupidity did happen in some of the markets that I worked with. And it started out trying to be a handsome young hero comes in to save these loonies. And what it turned into was so much more beautiful because the handsome young hero basically became one of the loonies mm-hmm. by the end of the show, he embraced the goofiness and the eccentricities of everybody he worked with to the point where by the end of the show, he was no longer the handsome young idealist coming in to save the station. He was just another one of the bozos on the bus. And I love that. I know they didn't do it on purpose, but I love that inversion of that storytelling tale. If you sit down and you watch some of this, there are some dated references. But overall, I think it still holds up. And I have a friend, Stephen, and I have a mutual friend, Cameron Perry, who I think has made a point of growing up to be Dr. Johnny Fever.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
He wanted to be Dr. Fever, and I think he did it. And I think that's amazing.
I think that's what he said on the first day that he introduced himself to the rest of the class.
Right.
I want to grow up and be Dr. Johnny Fever. So there you go.
And so he did.
I don't know if he gets on the radio and says booger or anything, but
well, you can you now. And Steven in college always used to match his shoes to his belts.
I did. And I always put tape around my desk and told you to get out and close the door behind you.
Walls! I want walls! Really, it's a great show. If you haven't seen it, Zach, check it out.
It is pretty popular. I mean, it was into syndication for a long, long time.
Yeah, but
it was
not
popular when it came out.
No, that's the thing.
It's well known now, and that Thanksgiving episode is like what everybody knows from it.
I think that's the only thing they know of WKRP.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
They don't know about.
I've never seen it.
They don't know about the tornado episode where
the phone
Randy.
Cops.
Well, Randy or Randy Travis had to get on the name? Andy Travis
Andy
had to
Travis.
Get on the air and talk to a little girl, and hopefully she made it out of the tornado. And they kept cutting to this window outside the studio, and it was a really crappy tornado graphic moving back and forth across the city of Cincinnati.
And they don't know about the episode where Johnny and Venus were taking the drunk test where you get a little drunker
and
the drunker he got, the faster Johnny got.
Yeah. They were
or
trying to do
a beautiful moment where somebody says to drunk Venus, shouldn't you be on the air? And he looks and he stares off into the distance and he says, I am the air.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some great moments in that. And of course, Mr. Carlson, everybody knows as
the big guy,
as your Maytag repairman for many, many years, went to K-State, as well as Brad Pitt also went to K-State. So there you go. Yep. Little bit of trivia thrown in there with your top five, which brings us to our number threes. My number three is a little series that I found that was sent to me by the creators. Oh, man, it had to have been about 6 years ago, 7 years ago, maybe even. And I read it. And from the very first issue, I was like, oh, my God, this is the greatest thing in the world. And they're doing science in a fun way, and their lead character is punching the crap out of Nazis. I'm talking about Atomic Robo, which is a fantastic series if you haven't read it. It is about Tesla, who created a robot in the 1920s who is sentient, is fully functioning, has a personality, and the adventures that he goes on essentially from battling Thomas Edison and his cavalcade of evil all the way up to dealing with some Cthulian or some Lovecraftian creatures all the way to time travel and even a Western tale that just wrapped up not too long ago. The originally published from Red 5 Comics, the creators and the publishers have parted ways, but they are continuing their adventures online. And I think it's 3 days a week they post a new page from the new series. I think right now they're reprinting everything, essentially republishing everything online. But then when they get done with that, they will start publishing the ninth volume, I believe is what it is, online every other day. And when that's done, you get a collected, you can buy the collected version of that, and then they'll just keep going and going and going. But I mean, if you want humor that mixes in Atomic Robo and Stephen Hawking hating each other to the point where Hawking tries to strand Atomic Robo on the moon, and I think Robo writes in the moon dust, Hawking sucks.
Yeah,
to Dr. Dinosaur, which is a great character. This is a series I think you would love. It certainly is a cult hit among everyone who has read it. I mean, seriously, everyone who has read this on my recommendation comes back and thanks me later because it is that darn good. It's Atomic Robo by Brian Clevenger and Scott Wegner. Go check it out.
My number three is a film that, there's a theme with all mine. They're all movies.
They're all movies.
Just spoiler alert.
Start
all movies.
Sense a theme.
It's like I've been watching movies like once a week for the last 3 years. It's,
what?
You get that. Yeah.
My number three is not a movie that was on the list. It is more modern than anything I've talked about so far. It is a time travel film, Steven.
Uh-oh.
And I know you've seen it.
I probably have.
We've talked about it.
Okay.
It is a film I watched one afternoon after I listened to Ryan Johnson and Kevin Smith talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah.
It's a film that a mathematician decided to make. He only had a couple hundred feet of film, but he shot this thing down in Texas with his friends, and he's like the director, the sound guy. He did the score. He did everything. If you watch the credits in this film, it's about 15 people, and he's like five of the positions. To film with a couple guys who stumble upon time travel in their garage. They're trying to make like some weird fridge or something.
No, they're trying to create some new computer parts that move faster.
Is that what it was?
In the process.
Well, there was a fridge involved somewhere.
Yeah, in the process. It has to do with cooling, and in the process, they discover time travel. Yes. Yeah.
So my number three is a film called Primer. It's by Shane Carruth. It's a film that is... It was described by Ryan Johnson as the director of Looper, a time travel film, a thing he's going to be doing Star Wars in the coming years. He described it as the most confusing film he's ever seen, that he keeps going back and watching it over and over, and he can't really piece together how it all works. And it's like, well, I have to watch this. So I got it up on Netflix, and you feel really smart coming from a director who says, I can't figure out this film for about three quarters of the film. Like, I understand.
The ending,
this
totally
is easy.
Yeah.
I understand what's happening. Just going back in time. And then all of a sudden, it just hits a fan.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like they threw the script into a fan, literally. And then they found all the pieces of different names of different scenes and then put them together for the last 15 pages of the movie. It is bonkers to a point where I haven't watched it again yet because my brain hurt so much afterwards trying to piece it all together. But it is great. It is
fantastic.
Quick little film that's really good. It's good enough that he is now one of those directors. I mean, he's only done two films, but the minute I heard about a second film,
the Blue Orchid,
Upstream Color.
Upstream Color, yeah, yeah.
There's some Blue Orchids involved in that film. That I like pre-ordered it. I actually have, this is talk about
extreme nerdery
hipster
stuff.
I have the soundtrack on vinyl. It's great.
Wow.
It's great. So I have that going for me. That's a great movie too. Totally another cult film. But Primer is wonderful, and people should check it out.
That ending just freaked so many people out. And the same way with me, I was like, what the, and the how the,
yeah.
And it's one of two films that immediately after I watched all the credits, I went back to the very beginning and sat and watched it all the way through again. I don't want to ruin anybody's list, but Johnny Darko.
Donnie Darko
was the exact same way, where I was like up until 2 a.m. and that movie finished. I was like, what did I just see? And I stayed up until 5:30 watching it all again, because it was just that trippy. And certainly Primer is that kind of a film, and definitely worth checking out. Good one, Zach.
Thanks.
Rodrigo?
What are we at?
We are at number three.
Number three. So Matthew talked about Blues Brothers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I now at my number three, I would like to talk about what I feel, and you know, this is arguable, but what I feel is the Blues Brothers of my generation.
Oh yeah, Blues Brothers 2000.
No. much like I was like, oh, they're gonna make three of them, the Matrix is going to be Star Wars of my generation. That turned out to not be the case. Also, Star Wars was not the Star Wars of my generation as much as we wanted it to be. But no, Super Troopers. It's, you know, I mean, they'll entertain arguments that it isn't, but I would say
it is, because it was definitely not pop. I mean, it was only popular after it was out of the box office.
It was popular. It's definitely a cult film, and one that gained a huge kind of upswell of support after it was out of the box office. It's a super weird movie. It's infinitely quotable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not a guy who quotes movies a lot, but I will still quote Super Troopers every once in a while. It is hilarious. People like it now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not when it came out. And now they're talking about making a sequel.
Oh, it's done. I mean, it's got its funding, so it's happening. It is happening.
One of the guys was on a podcast, and they were talking about the syrup chugging scene.
Yes.
And it blew my mind that they actually chugged.
Oh, that they actually did it?
They, went into a sugar coma, whatever they call it, like a sugar coma, after they did it. Then, like, locked themselves in the trailers and just, like, shivered for 4 hours.
Yeah, there's a lot to Super Troopers that you really wonder how much of this was, like, written and how much of this is just what these guys just do in general. They're like, hey, let's make a movie. It's like, okay, oh, let's just grow mustaches for the purposes of the movie, but everything else is just going to be how we normally do things.
What came first, Super Troopers or Reno 911?
Oh, Super Troopers.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you for that one, Rodrigo. Another good one on the list. Matthew, what do you have for us as your number three?
I think I've talked about our number three, my number three, before, but I don't remember which podcast it's on because we do at Major Spoiler, so very many podcasts, like 10 a week, and I'm on like four of them.
Something like that, yeah.
I think it has come up in a top five format, but it is, I think, probably my first interaction with a really, really big cult thing. And I'm sure someone's going to come back and say, well, you said that about something else. And I'm like, well, I say a lot of things. You'll have to read it back to me. But one of the earliest really, 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 really culty things that I can remember loving and loving and loving, besides Night of the Living Dead, now that I remember having said that about Night of the Living Dead, is a movie that I caught on late night cable, as so many things did. And it terrified me. Not like scary. Not like, you know, Robot Monster, where that monkey clearly had a diving bell on his head and it scared me because I wanted to know who put it there. And it wasn't scary like the end of Night of the Living Dead, where Ben lives through the night and then gets killed anyway. Spoilers, by the way. It scared me because I instinctively knew that these were real people. And when you watch my number three, Todd Browning's Freaks from 1932.
Oh, yeah, man.
This is like, I think, a textbook case of a cult movie because it kind of ruined Todd's career. I mean, it's something that happened pre-code in Hollywood, so nobody said you couldn't do it. And they went to circuses and sideshows and they hired people who actually had, you know, I don't know if deformity is the correct term. I think deformity may be pejorative, but they had people who had, you know, disorders, and they were people, when you say, you know, the old things of the woman with a beard or Zippy the Pinhead, which is a terrible example, these are based on actual existing people. And the characters in this are really wonderful. And there's a point in the movie where they're all singing, "We accept her, Google gobble." And it's a wonderful, just a wonderful moment where you're like, oh my God, this is so warm and inviting and nice. And then it gets real. And oh my God, when the horror starts in this movie, I know I've talked about it before, but there's a scene. There's a man who has no arms and no legs. He has a knife in his mouth and he's crawling through the mud to come and get this woman who's done something terrible. And my first thought is, oh my God, that's terrifying. And my second thought is, what's he going to do with the knife? But this is like the ultimate cult movie. You really should check it out, Zach.
You really should. At the very least, do a search on YouTube for One of Us Freaks, and you'll see that whole scene.
Google gobble, Google gobble.
You'll see the whole scene. And it's, I mean, even though it's the woman is terrified to be associated with these people, it's really so much fun, and how everybody, even the guy that I guess is her date, I forget what the deal is, he's laughing at her, but he's having a good time too. And everybody's just like, hey, we're being all super accepting. And and it's just really powerful, even just that very short little moment. So definitely do a YouTube search on that. You'll find out what we're talking about. Okay, my number two is not quite a dystopian future, but the future is rather bleak for our lead character. He's traveled all over the country and has finally landed himself in Los Angeles looking for a job. He's even got his own tools. And then one night, while living in Shantytown, he notices something strange is going on over at the church. And the next day, the church is all burned out. But he goes in and finds himself a pair of sunglasses. And that's where the trouble begins.
Oh,
and also leads to one of the greatest fight scenes of all time. course, I am talking about the Rowdy Roddy Piper film, They Live. Vehicle.
Yeah. 1988.
Man, it should have been a trilogy of films.
Shouldn't
but,
it? They Live Again. They Live More.
Yeah.
They Live Free or Die Hard.
Yeah, they live, and then
they
the
live,
second
so
one.
We don't.
The first one is They Live. The second one is They Die. Yeah, and the third one is They Live Again.
Yeah, yeah.
No, they live, they die, and then they are in L.A.
It's super freaky. I mean, it is. I mean, some of my favorite lines come from this movie about I'm here to chew bubble gum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubble gum.
I'm all out of bubble gum.
And the other one where it's like where he's freaking out in the store, he goes, you're fine. You head cheese. And it's just like going. And it's like he puts on these glasses and these aliens have been brainwashing us to obey. I mean, there's a subtle, not subtle. Not a subtle message, but there is this overt message that we are slowly being brainwashed and controlled to just buy and be consumers. And that's what it's about. It really is. And it is super freaky and it is super good. It is a product of the times, but man, it is one of my favorites. So much so that one year for my birthday, my wife went out and bought an original script. Original script.
I thought you were going to say she hired Keith David to fight with you in a parking lot.
I know. I kicked his ass. No, she got an original script autographed by John Carpenter.
Wow. He who has the gold makes the rules.
Yep. Yep. It's. I was like, wow. And then the next year she got me Army of Darkness signed by Bruce Campbell.
Wow.
So my wife's
pretty
awesome.
I'm giving you a choice. Either you put these glasses on or you start eating the trash can.
I'm not putting on the glasses.
Wasn't this one of my movies?
Yes, that I was condemning you with a couple of weeks ago. Yes.
They got you. I believe you were fired from Major Spoilers for about 3 days.
You really need to, Zach, this weekend. Just sit down.
I actually have seen, I would say, at least 30 minutes of this film.
It's super slow.
And I remember him putting on sunglasses and seeing like the weird billboards and the people turn into like zombie skeletons or whatever.
It's a super slow movie, but it's good.
You look like your head fell in cheese dip back in 1957.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. All right, Zach, what do you have for your number two? I also have They Live.
My number two.
Is that your second birthday?
Pretty much.
That's pretty close. It's
but with a little bit more mustache.
Yes. Hey, I shaved all of my facial hair off this week because I got annoying. The thing is, it's not annoying as in that it's so long. It's that I was driving back from Kansas City and that I just get
the wind
bored.
Was blowing.
And so
it.
I I'm like super tactile and so I'm just like touching my face all the time. And it gets to a point where it just annoys me that I have this thing that I can touch and like,
flick
feel on my face and like. Crinkle all day, and I got home. I grabbed the thing like, rah, 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 and I de-aged by 5 years. If that's even possible.
Are you sure you didn't accidentally get a piece of tape on your face and just sort of pull your mustache off with it?
I tried that at first, but it proved to be too painful for my soul. Anyway, my number two is a film that when I first saw the trailer, I thought. Wow, that looks like utter garbage. It looks horrible. I can't believe they're making this movie. Isn't that the guy from like Superbad and all those stuff? Why is he doing this weird freaking movie? Didn't go see it. One of my friends like, dude, you actually he's probably like, bro. You
bro,
listen.
Open
man.
Your knowledge basket,
bro. Listen. You gotta go watch this movie. It's called Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, bro. And I was like, dude, that looked like I saw the trailer. It looked like utter garbage. He said, no, trust me. The trailers are horrible. This movie, you'll love it. So I go rent it from our local video place, pop it in, and then the Universal logo comes across in 8-bit. I go, oh, we're on to something here. I like how this is starting. And what proceeded was one of the funniest movies I watched whenever that came out, like 2010.
Yeah, something like that.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World, a movie that I still feel was horribly advertised because it looked like I said, utter garbage. And it is awesome. It is so fun. The lines, it made me go read the books that it's based on, which are somehow funnier than the movie, because I find the movie just unbelievably funny. It's so good. It's so well done that, because it's Edgar Wright. I mean, Edgar Wright is great. I mean, Scott Pilgrim. Oh, no, obviously, I'm talking about Scott Pilgrim. You know, all those movies that I can't think of. Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead. Yeah. Take that style into, like, video games and comic book nerdiness, and you get this movie that is quotable, that there's a 10-hour loop that we'll watch. We won't watch it for 10 hours, but it's just the fact that we can watch it for, like, 3 minutes of Scott just going, "But it's hard," is one of our favorite things to say. The vegan police is one of, like, milk and eggs, bitch. It's such a good line. There's so much good about this movie that I think I have it on DVD, and, like, you know, they do those steelback cases every once in a while. There's a really cool steelback of Scott Pilgrim, so I have that on Blu-ray. And this, it's just a funny, I can't get people to watch it with me as often as I want to, because it is just, I think it's hilarious. Aubrey doesn't find it as funny. But if you haven't watched Scott Pilgrim, welcome to Major Spoilers. I assume you've probably all watched Scott Pilgrim at this point. So I probably don't need to tell you to go watch it. But if you're that one person who hasn't, definitely take the time to go watch it this weekend.
I honestly think that the problem with Scott Pilgrim was that they debuted at the San Diego Comic-Con ahead of its worldwide premiere.
Uh-huh.
And everyone who would have seen the movie was at San Diego and watched it, as opposed to being disseminated across the country and going, "Hey, my friends, let's all go see this Scott Pilgrim movie this weekend."
Because this movie,
I mean, it tanked.
It is a production budget of $60 million and made $30 million.
Yeah, because they showed it for free at San Diego Comic-Con.
But it's now, if you follow the Scott Pilgrim page on Facebook, they talk about, like, the New Beverly in California shows this movie at midnight, like, all year round. Someone is showing it somewhere in this country at midnight all year
Rocky
round.
It's become the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah,
absolutely.
What do you have for your number two?
And he fights all the superheroes in the world.
Yep,
he does. For my number two is actually a very broad category and is kind of a play on what we're talking about. My number two is role-playing games. So there's kind of this thing with role-playing games where it's always been kind of this, and I mean, like, tabletop role-playing games.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of been this, like, small sector of the population that plays them. They've gotten more popular since then, but it's still actually kind of just a small fraction of the population that even knows that they exist or what they are. Also, cult things, because, like, people were, like, super freaked out that, you know, if playing D&D would get
like,
Tom Hanks,
I'm pretty
Ryan.
Sure I know a lot of people who assume that tabletop games are close.
I remember.
I don't want to be Jetstar anymore.
Yeah. Elfstar.
No, because I play Jetstar, damn it.
Yeah, no, you're right.
See, the joke is better the way I did it.
No, you're right. No, good job.
I'm heartbroken.
Better is still. Go ahead.
Steven.
I didn't say anything.
Yeah, no, I've talked to people. Like, I remember I was talking to a coworker, and we were talking about fantasy football, and she wasn't into fantasy football, and was like, "I don't get fantasy football." And I'm like, "Well, it's like, you know, it's like D&D for jocks. It's like D&D for people who like sports."
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, "Oh, haha, that's funny, except I don't think anybody's ever committed suicide from playing fantasy football." And I'm like, "I don't think anybody's ever committed suicide from playing D&D either."
Oh, that's funny.
The Tom Hanks effect is still there. Yep.
No, absolutely.
People, well, it was a pretty major, you know, made for network television.
Yeah, I mean,
movie.
For the majority of the life of role playing games, they've had kind of like a Surgeon General's type warning on the first page, where it's like, "This is a work of fiction. You are not actually a wizard," or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And the only reason for that is not because any person would ever pick up that game and think, "Oh, this is all real," is because that person's parents would.
I was driving home from Wichita late night one night, and I was flipping to other channels, and you can get a lot of
religion
people on the radio waves out here, and they were doing like an hour over, like, the satanic nature of, like, Dungeons and Dragons and stuff. I was like, I listened for about 3 minutes. No, I couldn't even take it. It was just so horrible. I was like, I'm done.
Yeah. You should have called them up and had a discussion with them.
Yeah, if they're like, there's this, you know, they actually draw sigils, and it's like, I'd be like, actually, Colin, I was like, actually, that's a 15th level spell. So
any most person, players yeah, stop playing
any person
at level
that
10.
Gets to 15th level, they've already interacted with Tannery and Batezu, which are both axiomatic evil entities.
That'd be so awesome for you to prank them. Yeah. That we're gonna have to do that, Rodrigo.
Someday,
like next.
It would have
weekend.
To be a very specific kind of conflux of situations. Yeah. Like me listening to Christian radio and also like being able to call in because I do hear Christian radio because I don't know if you've heard this on Top Five, but I travel around Kansas a lot.
What?
I travel up and down the state a lot, so right. I do catch Christian radio every once in a while.
So you're number. Two was what, Zach?
Scott Pilgrim.
Rodrigo, what is your number two?
Role-playing games,
which brings us to Matthew's number two.
Hi, my name's Matthew, and I like cheese. So my number two is a television-type program. You ever watch those on the TV where you can watch
TV? Stopped watching those a long time ago.
This is a television program that was decades ahead of its time in a lot of ways, in that first, it was in color, yes, Jackass. It was a limited run, which meant it had a beginning, a middle, and an end. It was designed to have an end, but like so many modern creators, the end was designed to be a little bit challenging and a little bit infuriating and a little bit hateful. And the creator actually said, I kind of want people shaking their fists and yelling at me and telling me how terrible I am.
Battlestar
1980? And that did happen. Sorry?
Galactica 1980?
No, it was not Galactica 1980. It was long before Galactica 1980.
Oh, okay.
And every episode of this show starts the same way with a beautiful, gorgeous, like 2-minute intro where you see the clouds roll in and then thunder and then the music goes dun, 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 dun. And then number six drives his car and he's driving. He's like, ooh, I totally quit being a spy. Ooh, now I'm going to go back to my house. And ooh, I'm going to go and do the, oh, no, they've gassed me and now I'm in the village. And every episode of The Prisoner begins with him waking up in the village and having to deal with really, really weird, weird, psycho, kind of crazy things. There is an episode of this spy series that is a cowboy episode. How do you do a cowboy episode where everybody is in one place, nobody can leave the village, and everybody is clearly a British spy in 1967? You're going to have to watch it because it's actually really brilliant. But 17 episodes of The Prisoner were made. And the last one, if you really get involved and you really sell your soul to this show and you want to know how it ends and you're totally into it, you get to episode 17 and I will guarantee you right now, you got nothing. You will watch that and you will come out and go, wait, what? And you'll watch it again. I actually watched it totally by accident from the Hayes Public Library back in the day because they had it and it was free. And I'm like, I don't have any money, but I have a VCR. So I watched the show, and to this day, I still haven't really unpacked everything that there is to unpack in it. Every time I see it, every episode I see, something new jumps out at me, or a new interpretation, or a new bit that I never noticed before that leads into something that comes later, or even better, leads into something that came before. That's what's really freaky about The Prisoner is it doesn't necessarily follow a linear timeline. And if you actually go on the internet and ask, how do you watch these 17 episodes? What is the running order? There are 4 or 5 different versions of how to watch The Prisoner correctly for maximum understanding. And I've actually done 2 of them all the way through, and neither is actually superior to the other. It's one of those shows that is such a cult show that you can actually watch it twice and get entirely different things out of it. And I love that. Love the fact that it's so it's not intentionally obscure. It's just so rife with meaning that you can pull different meanings depending on what you had for lunch that day and how your feet feel. My feet hurt right now, by the way.
You just put The Prisoner as your number two so that, yes, I wouldn't have to throw in my favorite quote from that. If you had put it as your number one.
Don't you do it.
Possibly Stephen, Matthew, and me, all three of us, have at some point had The Prisoner somewhere in our top five list on some episode.
Yep.
Yeah. And Stephen and I are an example of the main dichotomy, the two schools of big schools of thought on that closing episode, where he believes that one thing means something and I know it doesn't, and we will fight like dogs.
Just depends on whether there's just depends on if there's a properly placed comma or not.
You speak a lot of commas, do you? They speak English.
I know, that's the thing. If you look at it, and even in the on the wiki site, they have in parentheses a comma because no one knows whether there's an actual comma there in its delivery or if there's just a well placed pause.
This is how riveting British television is that people get. Start to argue about
the quote in question, because I'm sure everybody's heard it before, where number six is like, who is number one? And then number two is, you are number six.
Right.
No!
Or, you are number six. It depends. You can deliver it in a lot of different ways, depending on how you deliver that line. It can have two different meanings.
Here's why it's complicated, is because there are multiple number twos.
Yes.
Right.
So each number two delivers a line differently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's like 13 variations on the way that line is spoken, which, you know, throughout 17 episodes can definitely mess with your thing.
The Listener is a super weird show, and if you get the chance, you should watch it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It feels like it's gonna be really hard for me not to make.
But it's like super. It's super.
Number two's being thrown out everywhere.
It's super.
Everybody
mod.
Gets numbers.
Yeah.
It's like the 70s version of Kids Next Door.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Except with fewer little English children with magic stuff in there.
Like I said, it's super mod. So all the clothing is very mod. It's that very vibe in it.
How long is it? 17
episodes. So you're looking at
17 45-minute episodes.
Yeah, 14 hours of content.
Where is it at?
I'm sure you can find it on Netflix or Hulu or one of those places. Netflix. It's not.
On Hooflix.
I know AMC tried to do a remake of that. Wasn't it AMC, Matthew?
And I think it used to be, while they were doing that, that you could watch The Prisoner on the AMC website.
Mm. Yeah.
Possibly. Let's see. I'm not sure if it's available or not.
Well, it should be. Watch The Prisoner online. Well, certainly they've got The Arrival up on YouTube. Oh, that's from the 2009.
Yeah, don't trust that. That's got the guy in it and the other guy.
Yeah.
It says, let's see, maybe you can watch it at AMC.com. At least this link says from 2009 you can.
Well, that's
so there you go. It must still be relevant.
All right.
We could get to it's time now for our number ones. And man, I had to really decide on these number ones because in my also-rans, I've got some great ones. Mm-hmm. Starship Troopers is one of my number ones, or could have been in my top five. Army of Darkness could have easily been in my top five. And what's interesting about, I think, when we look at cult movies is discovering people who are into these things as much as you are. Because I discovered Army of Darkness on DVD. It came out and I picked it up in the early days of DVD releases. And I kind of loved it and coveted it. Same way with Starship Troopers loved it and coveted it. And then when I, but nobody else did. Even my people just didn't care for it. When I moved to California, my good friend Dave was like, hey, man, we're going to have a party at my house. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. You want to come over? We'll drink some beers. And I'm like, okay, Dave. Went over there. Like five of Dave's friends show up. And they pop in, Starship Troopers, and right after that, Army of Darkness. And the whole night, we're just getting blasted and watching both of those movies and just screaming out lines at the top of our lungs. And it's really, really, really good times. But still, I think as great as Starship Troopers and Army of Darkness are, they do not come close to the greatness that is my number one. And it's definitely a cult favorite because they're considering remaking it right now. I am, of course, talking about Big Trouble in Little China that everyone here has seen, including Zach, because I sat him down and tied him down and propped his eyeballs, his eyelids open, and put little drops in there.
No, that's a Clockwork Orange.
Oh, I'm sorry.
If you're a Major Spoilers VIP, you can share that experience with poor Zach.
Yes.
I mean, that was an afternoon to remember because that movie is awesome, but 1,000% absurd in almost every scene.
I like to think of Big Trouble in Little China as three separate movies happening at once.
Yes.
Mm.
And I mean, in the same way that if you pick any three pieces of music and play them at once, it's just going to sound like a weird mess, except at like random times where all like magically syncs up and makes sense for about a second, and then it goes back to being a mess.
Oh no, Big Trouble in Little China is just so good on so many levels. It is this. It, unfortunately, I think it only made like $11 million in the box office, which was just horrible. But what happened was, like, not even 3 months after it was out in the movie theater, my friend in high school was like, "Hey, man," and she came over Friday night. We'll watch the HBO. There's this movie you've got to see. And I was like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, it's just crazy, crazy. You just have to watch it. So Friday night, after we're done with all of our football and whatever for the season, I went over and we stayed up until I think it was like the 10 o'clock movie on HBO. And we watched Big Trouble in Little China and just flipped our minds out on it. And every time it was on, I always found some reason to show up at my friend's house. "Hey, man, what you doing? Hey, you got the HBO. Let's flip it on and watch the Big Trouble.
Let's see what's on.
Let's see what's on HBO. You know, Big Trouble in Little China. Let's watch that movie." Oh, man.
The fact that you had the HBO guide stuck in your boot was kind of a dead giveaway.
Oh, no. Because back in the day, if you were an HBO subscriber, they would send you this little pamphlet, this little catalog that had their whole HBO lineup for the month. So you could go in and you could see, oh, here are the new movies premiering this month. Here's their entire show guide for when these shows are. And man, when I saw Big Trouble in Little China, I just casually opened that up. You could see exactly what nights it was playing on. Oh, that was awesome. Awesome. Big Trouble in Little China. Greatest movie.
Have that tattooed on your arm for later.
It wasn't until it got on HBO and into VHS that people really discovered how brilliant it was, including John Carpenter's theme song music. That it became a huge success. And like I said, they're talking about The Rock remaking it.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather, again, so many people agree with me that it should be a sequel and not a remake.
Yeah.
So there you go. Zach, what is your number one?
Is it Army of Darkness? No, it is not. It is a movie that is better than that, but I say that watched
Then
Army
it must be Starship
Darkness.
Troopers then.
It is not. It is a film that I have watched and we have talked about on a podcast called Zach on Film.
Another Ryan show on the Major Spoilers podcast.
This is a film that I actually watched just briefly before we talked about it on the show because I wanted to watch another movie by the same director his recent film. I hope maybe someday it'll be a cult classic because I think more people should watch it also. But this one we've all watched. It's great. I have found it endlessly rewatchable. And I try to make references to it in my daily life, but that people just fly over their heads.
Yeah.
Because they're probably not very good references, and a lot of people watch this movie. But my number one cult thing, which in this case is a movie, is Terry Gilliam's Brazil.
Yeah, it is.
It's
become one of my favorite films of all time now. I love this story. That was one of my favorite episodes to do on Zach on Film because there was just so much to dig into, not only production, but just the themes and and what they were showing on screen, which is just incredible. And the script is, I love it. It's one of those films that's on my short. It's like it's in my Amazon wish list of things to remember myself to buy. The Criterion, like 3-disc collection.
That has four different movies.
Like all of the different versions of the film on it.
Did I not let you borrow my copy, or did Rob not return it?
I'm pretty sure Rob. I like rented it before I watched Zero Theorem, which is Gilliam's most recent film. But then I think I just have it on iTunes with all whatever features are on there. But yeah, Brazil is absolutely wonderful. Steven recommended that I watch Brazil and then 12 Monkeys and then Zero Theorem, which is a great thing. I think if you've never watched any of them, or if you watch some of them, absolutely, you don't have to watch all of them, like especially like Brazil and 12 Monkeys, you've already seen them before you watch Zero Theorem. But if you haven't watched any of them, I highly recommend watching that order. There's this kind of overarching like sub-narrative that Gilliam's putting in through all these films that kind of weave in together, which is really interesting, even though if he doesn't quite admit it, I think it's there. It's absolutely wonderful. It's in the 80s movie. It made like $9 million at the box office, which just blows my mind because of how awesome this film is. But yeah, number one, Brazil.
Just to follow up, The Prisoner, you can get on iTunes for $29.99. So there you go.
Pretty good.
Nice.
All right, Rodrigo.
Episodes?
For 17 episodes, $29.99. So there you go. Yep. $1.99 an ep.
That's like four episodes of Doctor Who.
Yeah. What do you have for your number one, Rodrigo?
My number one is two movies, the original and its sequel, which I think have become big cult things. They didn't do poorly necessarily, but they've certainly become more popular kind of in retrospect. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. as people kind of go into their cynical faces, they make fun of it. And then when they grow out of their cynical faces, they start saying, like, you know, this movie's actually had a really good message. Mm-hmm. A good message on it. That's Bill and Ted's mm-hmm. movies, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. You know, there's a lot of people out there who recognize Bill and Ted, even though they've never seen the movie. Like, there's just enough gifs of Bill and Ted mm-hmm. floating around the internet.
Yeah, especially, whoa.
Yep. And you know, the air guitar stuff mm-hmm. and yep, exactly. Like, people recognize that. That is like huge. Like, a lot of people, like, if you go excellent and then you like pretend to play the guitar, they know what you're referring to.
Or if you say Strange Things Are Afoot at the Circle K.
Strange Things Are Afoot. Again, another like incredibly quotable movie. You know, be excellent to each other.
Mm-hmm. Party on dudes. Yep. Absolutely. Oh, no, that's a great... I came out of that movie just super psyched.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we followed it up. Was it in that same year that Yahoo Serious came out with his movie? Had to have been around the same time, because I was like, oh, man, those two back-to-back are like the perfect combo of uh-huh. silly craziness. Yeah.
Young Einstein?
Yeah, Young Einstein.
And I'm...
1988.
I'm a big fan of Bogus Journey as well. Like, that one doesn't get, I think, as much... respect as it deserves, and definitely not as much respect as the first one, because it's insanely absurd. It is like super weird.
The Bogus Journey. Yep. Yeah,
but I think it like it continues the message. It like it's kind of like I don't know, it's like it takes the same characters, puts them in a similar situation, but it's like it's kind of like being like, okay, here are the kids from Narnia, and then you watch Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. You watch them go through that. And then in the sequel, you throw them into, like, Mad Max and see what they do. I mean, it is kind of, like, weirdly, it's, like, it's kind of the same idea of, like, these two guys are traveling around, but it's, like, let's not do time travel so much as just whatever we want. So, yeah, definitely. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Bogus Journey, my number one cult thing.
There's actually a Bill and Ted's excellent comic book that's out right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think this week, or no, I'm sorry, because this comes out way in the future from when we're recording it. I think Evil Robots Bill and Ted are on the cover.
Oh.
Yeah.
Evil Robot Usses.
Evil Robot Usses. That can only be combated by good robot Usses.
Yes, exactly. All right, Matthew, it is up to you. What do you have as your number one?
Well, as always, when I bring it up in that final, that keynote position, I like to end the show with a feeling of sort of, oh. So my number one is actually from the world of comic books, which is kind of where my wheelhouse is. There's a lot of comic books that I've read and a lot of comic books that I love. And it may surprise some who have heard my rants that this is from the 1990s, a decade where a lot of bad comics got made and a lot of good people made bad comics. A lot of bad people made a lot of money. But this is a book that is literally way ahead of its time. It features a main character who seems to be the leader, but actually has nefarious sort of anti-hero purposes. It has a character who is openly bisexual, hitting on another character who realizes that he's not openly bisexual. It has a whole lot of sex and a whole lot of weird stuff and not necessarily a whole lot of traditional comic book narrative, which is, I think, what doomed it circa 1996. But in the year 2015, Young Heroes in Love from DC Comics, 17 issue.
Classic.
Yeah, plus a zero issue or a 1 million issue that doesn't have really anything to do with anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a really strong series. And what it really breaks down for me is how far you can distill the concept of a super team, because it has everything you expect from a super team. It even has things like the fire character and the ice character being strangely attracted to one another. But it plays it sort of straight, but it's also very aware of what it's doing. One of the characters is not just a superhero. She is an expert on metahuman history, which is to say she read a lot of comic books. There's a point where they meet Superman and they're doing the standard trope of you meet, you misunderstand, you have the little fight, you do the thing, you invite the new hero to join the team. And then Superman is like, no, come on, guys. And then at that moment, Hard Drive, the leader of the team who has been this stand-up, square-jawed guy, breaks down crying and screams, well, we didn't want you anyway, and runs off into the night, reminding us that this is a bunch of teenagers. It's got this wonderful bit where the character Junior is 6 inches tall. Everybody assumes Junior is a shrinking character. And at one point, somebody's really upset, and he's trying to talk to her, and they're all like, dude, grow back to normal size so she can hear you. And there's this beat, and Junior just kind of looks down and goes, I don't shrink. This is the size I always am. And then it's a terrible, awkward moment for everybody. The kind of stuff you never get, and certainly not in 1996, out of a superhero comic. Really weird book. I don't even know if they still have the rights. I think it may have been at a point where DC was having some creator rights things where the creators may actually own those characters. I certainly haven't seen him in the DC universe since the 1 million incident in 1997 or 1998, whenever that was. But it's a great array of heroes. It's a great array of powers, and it's a really great chunk of story. And it has some of the silliest yet most respectful takes on superheroes and alien invasions and bad guys and giant monsters from space. Plus, it's got a lot of sex in it. It's not overt. It's not like, ooh, look at this pornographic comic. But it's young people being young people locked together in a room, and sometimes you make out with somebody, and that's really sort of fine. And, you know, I think that's kind of the story of my life right there. Sometimes you make out with somebody, and it's really sort of fine. And that's why my number one, Young Heroes in Love, is a really good book. I think I did a hero history of
it. Yeah, yeah. Yep. Of all the links on all the internets of all the worlds, there is a link to your hero history. No.
Hooray!
The Wikipedia is number one.
Boo.
And it's a very short entry.
Yeah, I'm better than Wikipedia is what you're saying.
No, because I said Wikipedia was number one.
Yes, but mine's better. You just said mine's longer.
No, I didn't say that either.
You said theirs is short.
I said theirs number one, but it's very short.
There you go.
So that is not the same as saying yours is very long.
Oh, God. Listeners, if you ever... You know, a lot of the stories that Stephen and Matthew tell in Top 5 revolve around them being in college. So Imagine, like, I just imagine that's what that life was like with, like, the two of them being like, I think that I could pull off a Flock of Seagulls haircut. It's like, no, you couldn't. You totally couldn't. That would be terrible. You'd look terrible. I'm like, no, I think you're saying that I could. I think your eyes say that I could, Stephen. It's like, no.
No, thank
my,
you, stop
both
it.
My eyes and my mouth are saying you can't do it. That would look terrible on you. I think I'm going to do it. I think you've convinced me to do it, Steve.
And then he showed up to spring prom with a Flock of Seagulls hairdo.
And like a bright red jacket.
And a bright red jacket and a pair of
pants. If it doesn't work, then
pants.
It's Stephen's fault.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, Stephen, I can't believe you talked me into this haircut.
Yes, that's exactly how every conversation went. Until I threw up my hands in exasperation and said, that's the end of the show.
That's not true. You threw up your hands long before that.
Yes, I did. But that is the end of the show. And it is time for us to say goodbye.
So long.
Farewell.
Farewell. Auf Wiedersehen.
Saying goodnight.
Infringement.
It's time for you to share your list too. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun.
And I'm
come on,
song.
Zach.
I don't really know that song.
Oh, come on, Zach. Have you even seen The Sound of Music?
Yeah, I've seen it. I even saw the Julie Andrews special in like 60 minutes. Then went back to all the places. It was wonderful. It's a very beautiful place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Magnificent.
Yeah. All Austria. Right. Austria. Yeah.
He's
the
learning.
Hills are alive. With zombies. Great crossover. A lot of crossover potential right there. You have Nazi zombies, children zombies.
I think just you do the Nazi zombies, and that's why they're trying to escape.
The sound of dismemberment. It's perfect.
Oh, yeah. guys, we should make this. Let's start a Kickstarter.
First, well, you know, they've done,
Austria.
What is it called? Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies.
Yeah.
Pride, they've done Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. What's the other one that they did? They did one that was another Jane Austen novel, but it was more like Cthulhu
stuff.
It
was like Jane Eyre with Mummy.
Yeah. Listeners, as I've said before, that's the end of the show. What you need to do is head over to MajorSpoilers.com, use the podcast posting page, and share your top five cult favorite things. And if you want to, throw in your top five zombie crossovers as well. There you go. Top five. That's it.
Woohoo!
Bye.
If you have any questions, comments, topic ideas for future shows, or would like to sponsor a show, send an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com. Visit majorspoilers@majorspoilers.com and be sure to check out the Major Spoilers Forum. You can also follow Major Spoilers on Twitter at twitter.com/majorspoilers.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.